This is the Gas House Gang on 104.1 FM KMOX.
Sponsored by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer. And by Overhead Door Company of St. Louis and Chesterfield Fence and Deck.
Now, the Gas House Gang on KMOX.
All right, the gang's back together. It's good to be with Bernie Miklas and Chris Ranji and Matt Pajeski and Frank Ladd and our many listeners across Cardinals Nation. Whoa, the microphone's flying all over the place.
You're
Let's go.
Excited.
Let's
you got that go.
Man,
tan.
I'm fired up.
Back from Florida.
Let's go. Let's start this season. I don't know how good this team's going to be. I don't think they're going to be all that great in the standings, but I'll tell you what. I am excited for baseball. I'm excited for Cardinals fans. They're already lashing out about Nelson Velasquez not being on the roster. That's fine. Like I liked the interaction yesterday. I thought fans went wild about a transaction, and that's the way I like it. I don't know if the Cardinals love that or not, but they did react to something that they enjoyed. They liked Nelson Velasquez, Bernie Miklas. They liked him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I found one thing about it I find really interesting is, to his credit, Chaim Bloom went out and his people went out and identified that Nelson Velasquez is a guy with real power, and he has proven in the majors, but what hurt him in the majors was a lack of plate discipline. They also noticed that he had really improved in that area last year in Mexico and AAA. So they get all the credit in the world for signing him. Like, that's why the Cardinals hired Chaim Bloom, moves like this. Then Velasquez leads their regular players down in spring training in every offensive category, basically. He could not have done better, right? He could not have done better. There is nothing else he could have done, and yet he doesn't make the team. I don't know. It more than anything, it confused me. I understand the pragmatic side of it, but I find it strange.
Yeah,
that's all.
I'm going to play the audio for you here. Matt's going to play it for you here. I will just say I'm also surprised. I thought that they would actually do the opposite. I thought they would put Thomas Tajaisi in Memphis and let him get his ABs going and see if Nelson can do it at the big league level and keep it rolling. And if it didn't happen, then you could make the excuse of flipping him. And you put Tajaisi back in after he's got some seasoning and you let Nelson take some rips down in Memphis. But they didn't do that. They put Nelson in Memphis right away. Here's why they did it, according to Chaim Bloom.
Yeah, tough one. He had a great spring. Really, there's nothing else we could have wanted out of him that we didn't see in the spring. Validates a lot of why we brought him here, and it was a tough one. Really comes down to, you know, spring training is a big part of these decisions. It is not the entirety of the decision, and we wanted to keep all of our players. There's things we like about all these guys. Obviously, some of them had better springs than others, but like I said, that's not the whole decision, and this allows us to keep everybody in the organization. You know, if Nelson keeps doing in Memphis what he did in spring training, I would think that he'll be a part of this at some point.
So this is obviously, they're just not trying to lose anybody, right? That's what this is about. This is a decision about options, and, you know, they can do this now, and they don't want to have to end up losing him or Herrera was going to make the team. I think he's the only player on the offensively who's out of options, right? I think it's Ivan Herrera. So maybe it has a little something to do with that, which is fine, but from an outsider, you know, I'm not in the mix. I'm not there in the dugout, you know, talking to these guys every day. I would like to, as a fan, have seen him make the team, because if this is going to be about figuring out what your roster should look like in 2027 and beyond, you know, you're trying to figure out what this team is moving forward. If he could be a part of that, then I would like to have seen him make the team out of camp and then just roll with it until it doesn't work anymore. Because that's what this is about, right? Finding viable players for the future. Is he one of them? Maybe. Does this prevent them from finding out 2 months from now? No, but I'd like for him to make the roster coming out of camp.
I think I think it came down to either Velasquez or Jose Fermin. And I agree with Tom Ackerman in that you could also make the case they could have sent Tajaisi down to Memphis. That would have made some sense. But they didn't want to lose Fermin, and he's the guy. He's a guy with no options left, and he played really well offensively last year. He only had 70 plate appearances, but he played very, very well. He had a terrible spring offensively, but he also showed he could play some outfield. But their concern, obviously, was that if they made the choice of Velasquez over Fermin, they risk losing Fermin because he would have to clear waivers before they could reassign him to Memphis. And they obviously probably didn't put him on the trading block. So, I mean, that's why I said earlier, like, pragmatically, I get their thinking on this, but I still don't like it, all due respect. I mean, I don't. I think there's other ways they could have got around it, as Tom Ackerman pointed out. Sejacy being the guy to send down. Maybe Pozo doesn't make the team at the start. I don't know. There's other ways you can set the table.
I agree. I actually would have preferred Velasquez in the lineup. We all saw it. I mean, the guy had tons of power. He led him in home runs, led him in hits. The guy had double-digit RBIs. You know, you're going to have – I'm just going to put him out there. This doesn't mean that all of Cardinal Nation feels this way, but it kind of felt like it yesterday. You know, Matt saying – facetiously, I would have hated to lose Jose Fermin. We may win 100 games with him in left field. You know, you're not going to win 100 games with Nelson Velasquez in left field either. And while I disagree with the move, I think things like this are a little unfair comparison, although Bloom's going to have to evolve as an executive, guys. But, you know, for fans, and I said this was a common theme yesterday. Oh, here we go again, another Mose lock. I don't see that. I mean, I think the new era is underway, and he's not going to go away from the plan that he's putting together, as much as I might not totally understand it at times.
I guess it for me, it's and I understand not wanting to lose certain players like Jose Fermin, because you'd like to have him in the mix in case you do need them down the road. But I guess for me, it's very unlikely that a year or two from now, we're all saying, man, I wish we still had Jose Fermin here. You know, I thought, man, things would be so much better if they had Jose Fermin on the roster. I don't think we're going to get to that.
No.
I tip of the cap last year. He hit well. Limited opportunity, but he hit well. But in his major league career, which is about 100 games, he's a 220 hitter and he's got a 600 OPS. You know, I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, And they need power. They desperately need power. You know what the changes they made this offseason, real quick? I'll be real quick. With the changes they made offseason, and you look at the 13 position players they're going to open the season with, those 13 position players combined hit 101 homers in the majors last year. 101. And the Cardinals hit 148 last year, and that was next to last in the National League. You gotta have some power, decent, solid power, to have a good offense in Major League Baseball. That's just the reality, and they don't have it right now, right? And I do believe, given his past and his improved plate discipline, I think Velasquez is a guy that could conservatively could have hit you 15 home runs, 17 home runs. You know, I don't know.
he's not a gold glover, but he's a fine outfielder. There's nothing wrong with him necessarily. Grant makes the point back in 05 when Mabry was the last guy cut, then went down and knocked the cover off the ball, came up 2 weeks later and never left, says Grant. I don't remember that year, specifically that year, but I do recall that. There is something to be said also about the Cardinals wanting to have this approach of let's make contact, let's not strike out, let's string together at bats, let's win with speed and athleticism, and let's get on base. And I get all that, but there is an entertainment aspect to all of this too. And I think it's okay every once in a while to, you know, feed. You don't do what the fans want all the time, but it's okay to feed the fans a little something. I mean, they saw it with their own eyes. Velasquez was awesome in the spring. Maybe just a little bit of entertainment to throw them out there. But again, staying with a roster plan that it's almost as if, Ronj, that they didn't want Velasquez. Well, let me rephrase it. They didn't think Velasquez would have that phenomenal of a spring to where he would be a factor to make the team, unless there was some sort of injury that would necessitate putting him on the roster. I think what they thought is, we're going to put him out there. He's going to have a nice little showing. We'll put him in Memphis, and then when we're ready, we got a right-handed power bat we can throw right in there. Meanwhile, the guy leads him in home runs and RBIs and hits. He was great.
And they probably told him, and I don't know if they did it in so many words, but the understanding is, first man down, you're the first guy up. Like, we're going straight to you because you proved a lot to us during spring. And yeah, I mean, baseball's littered with guys who had great spring training appearances and then get to the big leagues and it just doesn't translate. That's happened to the Cardinals too. So I agree with you, Tom. I think that when you're in a position like the Cardinals are, where it's probably not going to be a 90 win team, you know, it's not going to be picked to win the division. They're not. Maybe you throw a bone to the fans every now and then, but if you are trusting your process so much and you've got a new regime in charge, I am okay with saying, look, we are doing things a certain way this time, and this is our plan. Trust us, it's going to work. I'm willing to give that trust to them now. But on the backside of that, they're going to have to deliver on it. 2 years from now, we're going to have to say, okay, everything you've been doing up until this point has made a ton of sense, and now we're seeing the benefits of it. So as long as they do that, I'm okay with what the decision is right now.
Dan, who loves Bernie as we all do, gives you some props there, but he also says the organization's betting on Walker for another year.
That's a must, though. They kind of have to.
That's not related to Velasquez.
No.
Bernie, is it?
That's a separate category. Yeah. It is. In other words, you just got to be logical about this. They never looked at it as like, well, who's better, Velasquez or Walker? That they didn't look at it that way at all, because they're committed to Walker. This is a huge year for him, and they're committed to it, as they should be. It's a rebuilding year. But Velasquez, the thing that does bother me about this, okay, and it's kind of funny in a way, because we all say, all of us, it's like, well, you got to be careful about spring training. You know, spring training numbers don't matter. But I think in some cases they do, because when you sign a guy, Nelson Velasquez, who really has shown very good power in the major leagues till he got off track with the swing and miss stuff, and he did something to fix it. When you dangle a carrot, you sign with a minor league contract, but you tell him, hey, we'll bring you to camp. You know, you can compete for a job. We can't wait to see you. You dangle the carrot, and basically you're challenging the guy to put up numbers. And he puts up incredible numbers, and you don't have a spot for him. And so it's like Heim Bloom, actually, he didn't realize it, but Heim Bloom's actually sent a very loud message, I think, unfortunately, that spring training doesn't matter. In this case, it didn't matter, clearly. I just think that's unfortunate. And I love Heim Bloom. I think he's going to do a great job, but this one's just kind of weird to me.
Let me stay on this before we ask you to talk about Stewart's American Mortgage. Let me ask you about Jordan Walker through this question from Mike, and this will go back to Bernie. Why is Walker handed a roster position? I think we know the answer to that, but let's let you answer that, Bernie, about Jordan Walker.
Well, Mike, by the way, I totally get your point, and I've been hollering, you know, a lot about Walker, although I kind of feel bad for him in that, you know, nobody, when he gets lost at the plate, it's like, it's almost like it's the dude just doesn't know how to get out of it. But Walker's in a separate category because he's 23 years old. He'll be 24 in May. We got a sign of what he could do in 2023. And we have a sign of what he's capable of doing because of his bat speed and his contact rate, his exit velocity. And by the way, I know people get tired of hearing about that. I get it. But you don't give up. The one thing you do, if you're planning for the future, and this should be what all this year is all about, you have to stick with a guy who will be 24 in May and has unbelievable potential still. That potential is still there. You don't quit on that. It's as simple as that. If you were competing for a pennant, and you say, well, we just can't afford to have a guy struggling out there, working through his problems. Well, that's a different situation, but they're not competing for a pennant. So I get it. And I also, and by the way, I get why people are frustrated with it too, but I understand why they're committed to him this year.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan, and by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
A lot of good stuff right out of the gate from our listeners, our viewers, from Bernie Miklas, from Chris Ranji. I'm Tom Ackerman, the Gas House Gang on KMOX. Aaron's checking in. These are some deep thoughts now about what's going on with the club. This was the offseason of a massive infusion of pitching depth, says Aaron. Do we think this year we finally determine what our hitters in-house, in-system have? And next offseason and draft, there's more of a focus on hitters. Or are we just pitching forward all the time with this new regime, asks Aaron. And Bernie, he goes on to say, sorry that I'm asking about the next offseason before this one even starts, but we get his point. So the pitching now is a little richer. Are the Cardinals going to load up on hitters? How do you evaluate that right now in the system?
Well, number one, if you can pitch and you have pitching depth, you can win more games than you should. It lays a foundation that is going to give you a stability that you really need. So even if you don't have a good offense, like the Cardinals don't, you're still going to be competitive. You're going to give yourself a chance to win. So I think that's important because pitching is always going to be the most important thing in baseball. But it's a great question. I know they feel they've got some people coming, you know, especially Josh Baez. But if you look other than that, Tom, and I might be leaving somebody out, you know, Raniel Rodriguez a little later on, they do have some people coming, but they're not here quite yet. I do think, though, this next draft, we're talking, you know, the 2026 draft is huge because, remind me, they have like five of the first 60 some picks, or what is it? Seven or eight of the first 80 some picks, mm-hmm. something like that. They've got a bunch of picks in the first, 70 or 80 draft picks. And that's where you can take some chances on some power bats and maybe hit the jackpot. A lot of draft picks.
And I know there is a question about Walker and this is, I lost the question, but it was from one of the listeners who wants to know why they're sticking with him when Dylan Carlson didn't, you know, they cut bait with him, but Carlson got an extra year of time with the Cardinals before they gave him four full years here before they made a decision on him. Walker's through three, and I don't have, and it's not even a full three. So I don't really have a problem with them giving him an opportunity. Plus he is very young. He's still, I mention this all the time, he's still barely older than Weatherholt is, who's going to make his major league debut. So there should be a lot in the tank with him. One way or the other, we're going to find out. And I have zero issue with them using this season to figure that out.
You know, can I jump in on this? Dylan Carlson, his last couple years with the Cardinals, he couldn't stay healthy. He was on the IL all the time. The other thing, he couldn't keep his weight and strength up. He physically was lacking strength, and they tried everything, but Dylan Carlson had some advice from other people and was trying it his way, and it never worked. And if Dylan Carlson was so great, all due respect, Tampa Bay, a team that is known for taking on guys who just didn't get it done elsewhere. Oh, wait a minute. We see this. We can fix him. Tampa Bay gave up on him right away. The Cubs took a chance on him, and I think he made their roster. But if Dylan Carlson was so great, why has he been bouncing around? You know.
And Carlson had what? Didn't he have about 800? No, about 600 more at-bats or 500. Or 600 more at-bats with the Cardinals than Walker's had so far.
And I sent a message, text message to you guys during the break. Back to that other question we had before the break. A good point was made by Mike. He said, well, listen, I thought last year was a year, you know, they were sort of giving the Walker, you know, to get him going or whatever. And so what, now it's another year? I get the sentiment, but Chaim Bloom was not in charge last year. Chaim Bloom and his people have moved into the front office. They're in charge now, and they believe they have more ways to fix Jordan Walker. Just like, Tom, when you were down there last week, they pulled him off the field. They put him in the batting lab, the hitting lab. They worked with him for 3 days. He comes out of it. First game was bad. Then he hit a rocket, hit a home run. Suddenly was looking better. They believe they have more ways to try to do something here. I think they deserve a chance the opportunity to back that up and get it done.
They have a lot of people involved in that. I totally appreciate that comment. And from Bernie, you're absolutely right. One last thing from Aaron. He said, how many different players will catch for the Cardinals this year? What would you put the over under at? I would say 4.5. I think that you're going to have, and he says this show has been one of the best things to happen to Cardinal baseball in a long time. We appreciate that. You're definitely going to have Pajes, Pozo, and Herrera catching games. You'll probably see Jimmy Crooks again, maybe. But I think Leo Bernal's the future. That's my prediction. That guy's got it. Back on the Gas House Gang with Chris Ranji and Bernie Miklas. I'm Tom Ackerman. Your questions and comments have been outstanding. We love the interaction. As always, we got it going, man. We got it going. Dan, who was critical of the Cardinals keeping Jordan Walker, says the Cardinals are going to be better than we think. He goes on to say over 80 wins. Wow. If that's the case, then they're pitching lights out. And they're getting unexpected contributions offensively, and they're staying completely healthy. If they do that, then that, I guess, is possible. I'm a little pessimistic on that number. Bernie, let's talk about something that was a positive development yesterday. We spent the first half of the show basically talking about Nelson Velasquez, but it was a foregone conclusion once Brendan Donovan was traded to Seattle that J.J. Weatherholt was going to be the starting second baseman. I think he is hands down the leadoff hitter for this team, and I think it's an appropriate way to start the season. You roll out number 26 and you say, welcome to the new era of Cardinal baseball. And J.J. Weatherholt, I hope, is a fixture in this town for a long, long time.
That's exactly right. I'm really looking forward to the season because it's beginning of a new era. You know, the Cardinals kind of went through the sludge and they couldn't get out of it, trying to compete, but not really having enough to compete as far as like some moves they could make to get them there. And they kind of were stuck in the middle. So this is a fresh start, and it's a process, and it's going to take a little while. But I like the fact there's this infusion of youth and that you have a lot of hungry guys. And all these guys, you hear them talking spring training as you did. You know, this is their time. This is their team. They want to make the Cardinals great again. They want to be part of that. That kind of thing to me is really, really cool. And that brings us to J.J. Weatherholt. But you're right, Tom Ackerman. I think it is like ideal, like the first at bat taken at home by a St. Louis Cardinal this season will be J.J. Weatherholt. I think it's symbolic. I think it also represents the future. I think it also sort of puts forward a guy that many will consider to be the face of the franchise along with Mason Winn. And it's kind of like, okay, let's get this show started. And, you know, Cardinals fans, I've been saying this, Cardinals fans are going to love J.J. Weatherholt even more than they realize. You know, once they see him in action and they get a sense of his personality and just the beautiful swing he has, his knowledge of the game, his competitiveness, the charisma, they're going to love this guy. Perfect guy to lead off the season for the Cardinals at home.
Yeah, and I know there's a question about Winn, and did Mason Winn do enough to prove he should be the leadoff hitter?
I think that's tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, yeah, and I know that he's trying to get at the both of you on it. And there are some people who still think he should, but, I mean, the answer is no. He doesn't get on base enough for it, and I'm not sure. I mean, maybe he improves that down the road, but Weatherholt being the guy, I don't know that there's anybody else that you would rightfully give it to. And Bernie calling it symbolic is that's pretty spot on, because this is a new era of Cardinals baseball. This is a new player, and he leads off for the Cardinals, telling you this is what the future is supposed to be about. How's it going to work down the road? Don't really know. What I'm curious to see what he is capable of doing, and he appears to have the mindset to do it well, and that is, how does he adjust to how Major League pitching adjusts to him? Because for a lot of guys, you've seen it time and time again, player comes up, has a pretty good start, maybe for the first few weeks, you think, wow, this guy is amazing, and then Major League pitching and scouting figures him out, and he doesn't do a very good job of figuring out how he's been figured out and responding to it. I'd love to see how he's able to do that once Major League pitching gets a real good look at him.
Listen, he'll have some rough stretches, but to your point, the one thing about him, his whole life playing baseball, is he's so smart, and he quickly figures out what they're trying to do, and he's able to correct himself. Like, yeah, he'll accept advice from a batting coach. Don't get me wrong, but he knows his swing better than anybody, and he knows what he has to do to fix things and make things right, or to counter adjust after they adjust to him. And I have friends all around baseball. I talked to one guy who I can't say who he is, but he basically is a pro scout and he studies the opposition. And, you know, he was looking at JJ Weatherholt. He was looking at a lot of tape. I said, well, what are they going to do? He said, I don't see a lot of weaknesses, except maybe you can bust him inside with a fastball. Like if you can get in under his hands in tight, high velo, you might get the advantage there. He said, but the kid's got no weaknesses, you know. And now that doesn't mean he's going to hit 40 home runs, but just in terms of like finding holes in his batting profile, finding holes in his swing, just not there. I mean, you just look at his on-base percentage. You look at how many pitches he takes. Some of the stuff is hysterical because you look at these numbers and you're like, you got to be kidding me. He hadn't even played in the major leagues yet. He's got this advanced hitting profile, this advanced hitting approach that, you know, a dude like Tony Gwynn would have been proud of as far as the approach.
Absolutely. In fact, I would go down the road and say that Weatherholt is like the type of player that could hit home runs if he wanted to. I really believe if he wanted to, if he was swinging for the fences, his numbers would be up. That's not what he is. He's a hitter that the ball will go out of the ballpark on occasion because he makes such hard contact. He's got a vicious, quick swing. It's just beautiful to watch. And he's a good fielder. He's a good teammate. He's got all that stuff going for him. Actually, going around the infield, I think it's a really nice infield. Now, not everybody's going to deliver offensively at the plate. We've seen nothing out of Mason Wynn so far. Alec Burleson's an accomplished hitter that needs protection. I think Herrera is that guy. I think that Weatherholt at second base is strong. Now, you look at third base quietly. Very, very quietly, actually. Nolan Gorman had a pretty nice spring in terms of pitch recognition and cutting down on his strikeouts. And I would go so far as to, Chris, say that Nolan Gorman is, once again, an X factor. But for the first time, he has a regular position every single day. And he knows, fully admits, I'm not Nolan Arenado. But I think he can field that position on make the routine plays. And gosh, if he could just get a 500 at bat season and show some improvement there, that would be an immense help to the club.
Get a 500 at bat season and don't strike out 34% of the time. Mm-hmm. Don't strike out one third of every one of your at bats or just over that. If he can avoid that, and I'm not saying that would, I talk about this all the time with Walker, that if he can figure something out offensively, they've solved right field for a bit. I use that word solve. I'm not saying that's what it would be with him, but it would give them an option, a realistic option that they could either stick with him in the future or find a way to move him for parts that they do need elsewhere, right? So I don't know. I'm rooting for him, obviously. It'll be really interesting to see because this is the first time he's getting an opportunity to start the season. You're the third baseman. You're the guy, and there's not anybody in front of you, and you're only going to get opportunities if he's hurt. That's not happening this year. This is your job. Go do something with it. And I'm not saying they're going to give him a full 6-month leash if it's not going well, but at least he's starting the season there knowing the job is his to lose. What can he do with that? I have no idea, but this is all on him now. Now he's getting that opportunity that maybe he didn't really get before.
I think I was pleasantly surprised by the Gorman who showed up in spring training. And yeah, we know it's only spring training, but with a guy like Gorman, it's never too early or it's never only spring training. When you show up to start a new season and you have a tremendously improved sense of the strike zone, you have a focused plate approach, you're laying off bad pitches, you're waiting for pitches that you can hit, you're happy to take walks. I mean, he was just so much smarter about his at-bats. And again, I don't care if it's spring training or not. He's got to show that he is capable of sharpening his plate discipline. And I don't care if it's March in Jupiter. I don't care if it's going to be next month in Cincinnati or whatever. Anytime you do that and you're Nolan Gorman, you're making progress.
Bernie Miklas on KMOX is sponsored by Stewart's American Mortgage, home of the Bagel Loan. And by Celica Heating and Cooling, a Daikin Comfort dealer.
Welcome back to the show with Chris Ronji and Bernie Miklas. I'm Tom Ackerman. Final segment of the Gas House Gang. Tomorrow's show coming to you from Brentwood Point Rally House.
That's on Eager Road.
It is, and it's right next to Chick-fil-A, and Amy is going to join Chris. Chris and Amy will be there from 9 to 11, and then...
9 to noon.
I'm sorry, 9 to noon. I've got my days 2 days. Let me promote 2 days at once. So tomorrow, you're 9 to noon at Rally House. We're going to bring in a former Cardinal, Matt Adams, to join you. Big City's going to jump in there towards the back half of that 11 o'clock hour, and he's going to stay with us for all of the Gas House Gang. So the big guy is going to be with us at Rally House. That's fun. I'm excited about that. And then opening day, you and Amy go 9 to 11.
Mm-hmm.
You and I will go 11 to 12.
Cardinals Nation.
Glover and Wheeler, 12 to 135, all from Cardinals Nation, air conditioned, because it's going to be a high of 94 on Thursday.
Did you see that?
It's unbelievable.
I hate it.
Be careful now. Our bodies aren't ready for that just yet. So you got to hydrate, folks. Yeah. This is not, beer doesn't count. You got to be careful out there.
Well, it counts a little bit.
Hey, Ronji, since you're going to be at Rally House, man, hook a brother up.
What you need?
Just give me a good hat,
lid.
What's your
hat size?
I don't know.
You're a snapback guy?
Yeah, I'm a snapback guy.
All right, I'll find you something. All right,
that's great. They have great stuff there. They really do. We're gonna have fun out there.
That place is jam packed with stuff. They got Mizzou and Billikens, Cardinals, City. Yeah. They got everything.
They have everything you could possibly want. So Big City, come out and see us. So we're gonna be out there. Come meet Matt Adams. We'll be at Rally House, Brentwood Point, the one next to Chick-fil-A. Bernie, I bring all of that up because this is, I believe, it will be your last Gas House Gang before opening day. So I want you to look, we sit here, we pick apart everything that the Cardinals do. I think that that's part of the deal, is we analyze everything that they do. But there's something about opening day that is very special to everybody in this town one way or another. No matter how you feel about the current regime, it does bring back memories of the greats. I wanted you to, in our final moments here, tell us what opening day in St. Louis means to you.
It's a holiday, but it's also, it's a family day. And what I mean by that is that, especially when things are right, I mean, there's some friction between the Cardinals and the fans right now because it's been a tough stretch. That's inevitable in sports. I get it. But this is a great baseball family. And like any great family, we're talking generations and generations and generations. I mean, there are people out there who will tell you a story about how when they were really young, when they were like 6 or 7 years old, their grandfather took them to Sportsman Park to see Stan Musial. That same person who went to Sportsman's Park with his grandfather or her grandfather to see Stan Musial, they're planning to take their grandchild to go see J.J. Weatherholt. And so it's all connected. It's like the family of fans, the family of Cardinals baseball, the generations coming together, the generational line stretching and stretching and stretching. And there's almost something sacred about it. And even when, again, the baseball itself is not at a high point, the tradition of this franchise, the iconic nature of the franchise, what this family has meant to generations of St. Louisans who have all these memories of seeing all of these immortal players, but also being taken by the hand of their parents or their grandparents or an uncle, and the excitement that comes when you're walking into the ballpark for the first time in a season. It's a powerful thing that can move you emotionally in ways that very, very few things in life can do for something that is basically a daily activity. You know, it's going to the ballpark. It's a very special thing. And even though, again, it's a little bit of a downtime, let's not forget how special this is. And very few places in sports have this.
Not like the Cardinals do. There are other teams that make a pretty big deal out of opening day. And I don't know that we have it the absolute best, but it is pretty damn good. I mean, it's got to be top five, maybe even top three in the country. I know Cincinnati does it pretty big, too. But the history behind it, the tradition behind it, it's really difficult to beat. And you're right, Bernie, about that first time, and I have a very vague memory of, and I don't know if it was my first game, because I started going really young to Cardinals games at the old Busch Stadium. And I do remember a time being very little and going up those steps into what were the box seats at the time, and just seeing the inside of the building and thinking, oh, wow, this is something really cool. Wasn't an opening day, but it was just a regular season game, you know, middle of the year. And there is something very special about that. And to then get to do it on opening day, that must be incredible.
It's just an amazing thing. I can't wait for opening day. And it'll be a tradition of mine to park at Ballpark Village and do our show. And then after the show, I walk straight across the street, straight across Clark Street is the Jack Buck statue. And I'll go over there and stop for a moment and think about Mr. Buck, who we love dearly. And then I will walk a few steps around the team store. And there is a brick in memory of my dad that we put in when the stadium was built. Bill Ackerman, and it's right in front of the team store entrance, just off to the right, and I'll stop there for a moment, and then I'll continue on and go inside the ballpark. And I love everything about the ceremony, the Budweiser Clydesdales, the players, the Hall of Famers going around, the current players going around and being greeted by the Hall of Famers. It's like that passing to the younger players, letting them know there's a standard here, and you are now part of the club. But there's this little thing that I always like about it, that I started picking up on through the years, is I love watching the opening day starter warming up out there. Mm. I don't know why that is. And it was always Yachty was out there warming him up. And Yachty never got to ride in that little trip around warning check because he was the starting warming catcher. And he's warming up the starter. And this year it'll be Matthew Liberatore. And think about what'll be going through his body as he gets ready for that moment. I always love that. And the other thing I thought about is this will be the last one. And next year you'll have Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina. Again, they're not officially named yet, but think about that. Next year's opening day, you're going to have those two gentlemen wearing red jackets at home plate. I mean, that's just awesome stuff.
Yeah.
What a family. What a Cardinals family.
Isn't it amazing, even with the sad losses of so many Cardinals icons in recent years, that there's – yet kind of another wave behind them to fill the void. I mean, this is just something that there's not a lot of sports franchises that even come close to something like that. And to extend the point, and I'm not putting this on J.J. Weatherholt, I'm using an example, but now it's also time for this next generation of Cardinals. This era belongs to them at the start. It's their time to take ownership of this, and it's their time to try and aspire to have the type of careers that make you a Cardinal for life and loved for life and honored for life. I mean, what a noble thing to pursue if you're breaking into the majors as a Cardinal.
Pretty great stuff. It's going to be a great day. Bernie, we appreciate you, buddy. Thank you, as always, for being with us on the Gas House Gang. Thank you to Chris Ranji, Matt Pajeski, Frank Ladd, our team here, all of our great sponsors, including Chesterfield Fence and Deck.